Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Well, welcome to another week of the News Roundtable. Today, in Washington, D.C., the Supreme Court is hearing the arguments for Janus versus AFSCME. That is Mark Janus versus AFSCME in regards to Janus being required to give part of his paycheck to a government union as condition for working in public service. This dispute has been going on for several years now, and we are finally at the Supreme Court level. Pay attention, this will be part of the national news story throughout the day today, and we will talk with Mark Hughes about this case on tomorrow's News Roundtable. Coming up on the back half of the show today, we're going to be speaking with John O'Sullivan, who is a former editor, and I guess still editor-at-large, of National Review. It has been, it will be 10 years tomorrow since the passing of William F. Buckley, Jr., and as Mary said after she left this studio, fine graduates from University of Illinois. So, interestingly, we will talk with John O'Sullivan about conservatism in the 21st century. I want to ask him how fascinated he believes Mr. Buckley would be at the current situations, not just here in the country, but around the world, and populism as it is swelling, not just in this country, but also globally. And if I can squeeze it in, a question about the legalization of recreational marijuana as it's being talked about here in the land of Lincoln and has already been put into place in other states around the country, and that Mr. Buckley was actually for that. So we'll get into those things and more coming up on the back half of today's show with John O'Sullivan. First things first, in with all the latest news from the WTAD newsroom. Say good morning to Scott Hardy, everybody.
Good morning, Quaid. Good morning, everybody. Marion County authorities have released the identity of the man killed Saturday, what's being called an accidental shooting. Marion County Sheriff's Office says 27-year-old Justin Tobias of Palmyra died Saturday afternoon at Hannibal Regional Hospital after being shot once in the chest while hunting. In a statement, the office says deputies were called Saturday around 3:15 to Highway 24 near the 36 interchange. They say Tobias was treated on scene by medical personnel, then taken to Hannibal Regional Hospital, where he died about an hour later. No one else was hurt, and the Sheriff's Office says it's not seeking criminal charges. They do say their investigation will continue. A Knox County girl missing since Saturday has been found safe. 16-year-old Stephanie Love of Novelty, along with 20-year-old Emily Yeary, were found last night in Kirksville by police after an anonymous tip. The Edina Sentinel reports that Love was first reported missing Saturday night, and the authorities were looking for Yeary, who they thought might be heading for Illinois, Indiana, or South Dakota. Knox County Sheriff Robert Becker says Yeary is being held at the Clark County Jail pending formal charges. He also says Love's being held at a juvenile facility in Kirksville. The McDonough County Sheriff's Office says it's under investigation by the Illinois State Police, and that's been requested by the McDonough County State's Attorney's Office. McDonough County State's Attorney Matt Quicala says the Sheriff's Office will be investigated following the release of a 911 audio recording that was released earlier this month from a 2017 complaint against a reckless driver who at the time was thought to have been intoxicated. That driver turned out to be McDonough County Sheriff Rich Van Brooker. Quicala says he requested the investigation after the recording surfaced, but removed himself because of his workings with the sheriff's office. Van Brooker says that he was driving when he experienced the onset of what felt like vertigo as well. Both the Illinois State Police has not commented. Illinois Attorney General's office says it's not investigating at this time. Keokuk city leaders are accepting proposals for vacant lots and structures in downtown Keokuk. City Administrator Aaron Burnett says the city acquired the properties in hopes that future businesses will invest in the downtown. The plan is part of efforts to clean up Keokuk by removing or restoring dilapidated buildings, and Burnett expects that bidding process to be competitive due to the expressed interest. The bids will close on March the 12th. And finally, MoDOT crews doing road work this week on U.S. 24 in Marion County, which means one lane is going to be shut down. That work on 24 being done from Marion County Route F to Missouri 6 each day between 8 and 5. Core drilling, you need to use caution and obey all signage and personnel. The work could be delayed or rescheduled due to the weather. So that's a little look at what's going on. Quincy City Council meets tonight. Not much heavy lifting this week. The big thing on their agenda is going to be basically to formalize agreement to where the Quincy Fire Department would have a formal reciprocity agreement with Palmyra firefighters for anything that they do. They've had an informal one for years, but it's never been actually written down. So that's the big thing. The heavy lifting, of course, will be starting next week when they start getting into, if not next week, then the next couple of weeks, when they start really looking into the budget.
The budget, right. Yeah, the budget is the heavy lifting. So, all right, be mindful of those working on the roads or around the area. And so downtown Keokuk trying to invigorate that sector, kind of the way we've done here in Quincy with the district then?
Yeah, pretty much. So.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 10:14, and we'll step aside, handle some business. And when we come back, the plan is to talk with John O'Sullivan, former editor, and I guess, as we said, still editor-at-large with National Review. That's coming up next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
Welcome back to the News Roundtable, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Very pleased to have joining us this morning on the News Roundtable, editor-at-large of National Review, president of the Danube Institute Think Tank, and also director of the Washington Think Tank, 21st Century Initiatives, John O'Sullivan. Welcome to the News Roundtable.
Thanks for inviting me.
Tomorrow is the 10th anniversary of the passing of William F. Buckley, Jr., perhaps the face and voice of conservatism post-World War II in this country. You had a big role in becoming editor at National Review after Mr. Buckley passed that on to you between 1988 and 1997. How fascinated do you think Mr. Buckley would be at the political games being played in regards to Russia and the 2016 election and the subsequent investigation in D.C.?
Well, Bill returned to us in his middle years. He'd be very fascinated. I mean, he helped to make the politics of the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. But, you know, as time went on, and as he approached death, he got increasingly interested in politics and began to think about the things, the full-ass things, and the future that awaited him. But while he was active, there was no one more fascinated or no cleverer and more subtle commentator on those politics.
Our guest this morning, John O'Sullivan, editor-at-large of National Review. It is quite the responsibility to carry on that legacy of conservatism. Post-Buckley, did you feel that weight between 1988 and 1997?
Well, you obviously do feel it when you start, don't you? I mean, it was an awesome responsibility. But once you get into any job, you start doing it, and then you get more confident at it and so on. And Bill and I saw eye to eye on most things. Proved my worth or whatever, he let me get on with it. And so I thoroughly enjoyed those years, which were exciting years. They saw the end of communism, and they saw the birth of a lot of a new and freer world. They saw the spread of free market information capitalism, and the lifting of about 3 billion workers in Asia from absolute poverty to participation in the labor market. We now have an Indian middle class. We now have a Chinese middle class. We didn't have those things before, and that's partly the change was brought about, obviously, by Ronald Reagan, but second only to Reagan, and maybe equal to Reagan, it was Bill who founded the political movement, American conservatism in the 50s, that helped to bring all these things about. So it's a phenomenal record he has. And I'd make one final point. You know, in some ways, Bill is the first celebrity, the only celebrity conservative. I mean, he became a celebrity with the publication of his book in his mid-20s, and he was famous for the rest of his life. Now, Reagan was a celebrity, but he was a celebrity before he became a conservative. And other people are like that. But Bill was the first celebrity conservative, and so far, no one has ever really matched him in that.
Certainly, that is the case. John O'Sullivan, our guest this morning on the News Roundtable. How concerned should we be concerning the situation in China right now? You talk about the rise of a middle class in Asia. We find out over the weekend that President Xi in China is trying to be essentially invited to be dictator.
Yes, I think it's extremely worrying. Because although China has not been a democracy since Deng Xiaoping started the reform movement, it was moving towards what you might call a preparatory democracy. It was developing stable institutions which were not dependent upon the will of one man. It was dependent on the will of one party, but that party was kind of a bureaucratic apparatus, and it did try to take into account to be more liberty to people, and certainly more economic liberty. Now, it's never, in my view, been a real democracy, and it's never been a real free market, but nonetheless, it's been a big improvement on what came before. And what came before was the cult of the personality, which we saw with Mao, and before that with Stalin. And what we now have with this latest news, as you say, is the beginning of an ominous trend back in that direction. And one only hopes that that will, first of all, not go very far, but if it does, I think when we've got to hold our breath, cross our fingers, wait for the death of the dictator, which normally brings about some kind of reversion to a more collective leadership and a more rational and legally controlled leadership. But that's a long way ahead, and this at the moment is bad news.
You mentioned the cult of personality. I want to tie that to President Trump. Mr. Buckley referenced that he wasn't such a fan of Donald Trump back at the turn of the century. I'm curious to see what you think Mr. Buckley would think about the election of Donald Trump and the growth, the spread of populism around the country, and I guess globally, over the last several years.
Well, of course, there are several really important points there. Let's take the cult of personality first. I mean, there's a huge difference between the cult of personality in a society like America's, in which the cult of personality has no official backing, so to speak. It's not present in all of the media. In fact, the media is rather hostile to Donald Trump. It's not present throughout the society. Something enforced, and people are frightened to go against it. No one is frightened of being imprisoned because of Trump. And so that's the first point. The second point is to say that Bill would have had an ambiguous view of, he would have been ambivalent towards Trump. He would have loved the circus. He would have loved the ability of Trump to play conjuring tricks with his opponents, to come ahead of the game when everyone thinks he's lost it. But of course, I don't think he would have agreed with Trump's economic protectionism, and he would have said so. I mean, I think there would have been real battles. But where would he come out? I think he would have come out not for Trump exactly, but certainly for Trump against Hillary, or for Trump against the modern Democratic Party, which is veering, I think, wildly out into left field.
Yes, the applying the most conservative candidate rule that Mr. Buckley engaged back in, was it the late 60s?
Yes, as well. Yes, it was in relation to, it was in the mid-60s, yes, the late-60s. His view was that the conservative movement should back the most viable candidate of the right, not necessarily the most right-wing one. And for that reason, of course, the rule came from James Burnham initially, his great brilliant aide who had already made a mark on American intellectual life, and he joined Bill. And of course, Burnham wanted to support Nelson Rockefeller, which in retrospect doesn't look like the most viable position for a conservative to take from my standpoint. But in the end, the movement gravitated towards Reagan, and in fact, Reagan seized its leadership. And of course, by his boldness, he turned the conservative and Republican government into a conservative government without there being a breach between the two. And what's the problem at the moment is we have a Republican party and we have a conservative movement, and they're not exactly the same thing. Maybe they never will be, but they should be closer, ideally, than they are at the moment.
Our guest this morning on the News Roundtable, John O'Sullivan, editor-at-large at National Review. We've reached an interesting point in this country over the last week plus regarding the Parkland, Florida school shooting. The view of citizens to demand that government do something, and specifically, at least when the media is engaged, that something is to begin a review of the Second Amendment and whittling it away. I believe that Mr. Buckley would be very much for the adherence to the Second Amendment and perhaps different ways of approaching protection for our children.
Well, I think you're right. Bill was a constitutionalist, and that meant that he always tried to find solutions that were within the Constitution or compatible with the Constitution. Now, we're at the beginning of a debate on this, and I don't think that the immediate response, which has been amplified by the media, some of whom are acting as cheerleaders for one side of the debate, and most liberals, most liberal institutions have never exactly liked the Second Amendment. So I think that we've seen the first attack. We've seen the case of the prosecution, so to speak. I now think we're going to see an extended period of deliberation, the case, so to speak, the defense. And that case is going to concentrate on, first of all, looking for the errors in the case for a kind of extravagant version of gun control. And secondly, it's going to propose, as you more or less suggested, the possibility, propose solutions within the Constitution and compatible with the Second Amendment. And I think that can be done. But it has to concentrate on dealing with crime on the one hand, and then specifically singling out some of the school shootings, which are sui generis. I mean, they are committed by people who are not normally career criminals, who are driven by some weird psychological drive, which we only really are beginning to understand. But we have to look at those things, and we have to look at the ability of institutions to examine the behavior of the school students, for example, and try to find, and if there's anyone there who seems to pose a serious threat, we have to find a humane and decent way of dealing with that person before anybody else gets hurt.
Our guest this morning, John O'Sullivan, editor-at-large at National Review. And I would encourage our listeners to click online to National Review to read your articles about Theresa May and Brexit, because that vote came, what, almost 2 years ago now? And they're still negotiating through it?
Well, there's something like 20 months ago, something like that, yeah. Well, they're still negotiating. It was never surprising that there would be negotiation. What I think is upsetting people is the idea that the negotiation is kind of one-sided one, that the EU makes demands, we protest, but then we yield to the demand. The British protest, but then yield to the demands. For example, I don't think that Theresa May should ever have accepted the rule that we have to agree, Britain should agree to pay some large sum, anything from $40 billion to $100 billion, to agree to pay that sum before we even discuss the terms of Britain's departure. We don't know anything at all. And that decision forced the government again and again to make concession after concession. At the moment, the situation in which it could even be the case that the government will lose a vote in the House of Commons to a, let's face it, to a party, a Labour Party, which campaigned in the last election on leaving the single market, the jurisdiction of the European courts, or every aspect of the customs union, and which is now proposing to remain in the customs union in order to inflict a defeat on the government. If that happens, my feeling is that Mrs. May has got to be prepared to be bold. She's got to take a strong line and say that the government will not pass a bill saying that, in which case we will crash out. We might well crash out, as they say, of the European Union by dealing with Europe under the rules of the World Trade Organization. People say that would be too disruptive. I'm sure it would be disruptive, but not as disruptive as remaining in against the popular will by extremely tricky and dubious means.
John O'Sullivan, very enlightening conversation. Again, we encourage our listeners to check out your work at nationalreview.com. Thank you for joining us this morning on the News Roundtable, sir.
Not at all. Thank you for having me. I very much enjoyed it. All the best.
On tomorrow's News Roundtable, we'll be talking with Pat Hughes in regards to Janus versus AFSCME being argued in front of the Supreme Court today. That's coming up on tomorrow's News Roundtable.
The News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow morning at 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.